Milwaukee Journal set on Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you again. Three games into the 2019-2020 regular season, the Bucks are at 2-1. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and I'm joined on the other line by Matt Velasquez. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He, of course, has been at all three of these games to start the season. The Bucks opened with a scrappy win against a very good Houston team on the road, and opened the season with a victory, came home and lost a 21-point lead to the Miami Heat to fall back to 1-1 before beating Cleveland on Monday night. As expected, Cleveland, not one of the better teams in the East, and the Bucks did eventually pull away after maybe some dicey moments in the fourth quarter. So, Matt, we'll start there. The Bucks, it hasn't been a masterpiece to start the year. Now, 2-1 is fine. Losing at home is kind of surprising when you lose a 21-point lead. They didn't dominate Cleveland for much of that game. Not that they need to. They got the win and they pulled away and won convincingly late. But like I said, it was a 5-point game at one point in the fourth quarter. And the Houston game required quite a bit of grit to come back. Obviously, Houston's a tough opponent. You take that win any way you can get it. Giannis played tremendous in that game. But as you look at these first three games, I wouldn't say it's underwhelming necessarily, but it's not dominant. It's not maybe what we sort of assumed the Bucks would be able to bring to the table right away at the outset. Do you have any concerns about this Bucks team through three games, or is this just simply finding their sea legs, getting into the season, no conclusions yet?
Yeah, they're just finding their sea legs, as you mentioned. I'm not going to really, dive deep into it or look too much into what's going on. Obviously, everyone remembers last year when the Bucks started the season, close win over the Hornets, and then double-digit win. Like, I could keep going for a while because they were the last undefeated team in the league, and seven of their eight wins were by double digits. I think that's what people are remembering. They're remembering, okay, the Bucks started out great last year. They were catching teams maybe by surprise, just absolutely throttling teams. But as the season went on, like that didn't necessarily happen as much. There were certainly games where they did that, but they also got behind, kind of played with their food a little bit. Didn't have just totally dominant games. But to be 2-1 right now, I think that, they're pretty fortunate the way they started that game in Houston. It didn't look like it was going to end in a victory. And granted, the way they started the game against the Heat, it didn't look like it was going to end in a loss. That's kind of how the NBA goes. A 15-point lead, a 20-point lead isn't necessarily safe. We see teams come back from those deficits pretty much on a nightly basis. So right now, I think the Bucks are still finding themselves on defense, getting used to trusting each other within their scheme, being in the right places, building that chemistry with the different lineup combinations. I don't think there's any major cause to panic. And I think that, after the game on Monday night against the Cavaliers, George Hill, he said they're nowhere close to where they want to be, but that it's exciting. As a player, like, you don't want to be as good as you're going to be, in October. You want to know that there's room to grow and ways to get better so that when the important time of the season comes, when the playoffs get here, you'll have kind of put all these, growing pains behind you, and you're able to, play at the highest level. And that's really everything the Bucks are looking for. They're trying to be the best team come playoff time, not the best team right now. And they're going through the steps and the stages to build the right foundation for this year's team, even if it doesn't look as maybe convincing or dominant or however you want to call it, as it did last year.
Yeah, I think what made the 2018-2019 team so special is that they were able to start 8-0, like you said, and they were great at the end of the year, and they did win 10 of their first 11 playoff games. That level of elite consistency is just off the charts. I don't know if we'll see that again, but as far as the rotation goes, you mentioned George Hill. He had a great night against the Cavaliers on Monday. Pat Connaughton off the bench, flirting with a career high in points. I believe he finished, finished with 24 points against Cleveland. So the bench is contributing. The rotation maybe a little bit tighter than I thought it would be. We saw none of Sterling Brown on Monday night. We only saw the first glimpse of Dante DiVincenzo and DJ Wilson coming off the bench very late in that game on Monday night. We've talked about some of the other guys. We haven't seen, Dragan Bender, Thanasis Antetokounmpo. That's not a surprise. But are any of the rotation machinations surprising to you? Did you think we'd see more of a certain player, or is this about what you'd expected at this point?
You know, I thought we'd see maybe a little bit more of Dante DiVincenzo, but I'm also not surprised. I mean, you look at the guard rotation behind Bledsoe and Matthews, and you've got George Hill, who's playing very well, 10.7 points per game, shooting 44% from three. You know, obviously this is a small sample size, you know, but when you add in his nearly five assists a game, of almost two steals a game, like, you know, he's been bringing it. He's been playing really well. And Pat Connaughton, you know, he's had spurts, I feel like, in every game where he kind of just goes off for, like, you know, eight straight points. And it definitely happened against Houston. It definitely happened against Cleveland, where he comes in and he makes things happen. He's shooting really well. Again, small sample size, but, you know, when you're making 6 of 12 three-pointers on the season, especially coming off a year when he started the year slow, our colleague Ben Steele wrote about him recently. You know, he got off to a slow start, you know, in his adjustment to Milwaukee last year, but he spent a lot of time working with the assistant coaches over the summer, refining his shot, perfecting his shot, and he's very confident, shooting it really well. And then Kyle Korver, he's kind of in that 2-3 type position, and the Bucks obviously brought him in to play and to shoot, and he's doing those things. You know, he was 3-for-3 on threes against Cleveland, 8-of-15 this season. He's getting really great looks, and overwhelmingly, he's capitalizing on them. So it's just a question of which of those guys do you not play if you're going to put in Dante DiVincenzo or Sterling Brown? Ersan Ilyasova has been off to a good start to the season, and Robin Lopez is getting adjusted. So which of those guys are you not going to play if you're going to put in DJ Wilson? There's just a logjam of all this talent. And before the game on Monday night, Bud even said, like, you know, hey, there's guys that I do want to get in, but then there's also other guys who I want to get in. So, like, how do you figure that out? Like, there's just so many players to get out there, and he's been pretty consistent with going 10 guys in his rotation. You know, there were two instances in short periods of time where Sterling Brown came in, but for the most part, he's sticking, you know, pretty close to that 10-man rotation so far. And I think, you know, at some point, you know, injuries and wear and tear and things like that, those will come up, and these younger guys who have been getting less run, you know, they're going to get some opportunities. I feel like, you know, that might also allow, you know, Thanasis and Bender to be active for a game. So far they've been inactive, kind of as we expected. But, you know, the Bucks have a good problem, which is they have a ton of guys who are worthy of getting NBA minutes, and not all of them can.
I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of a Malcolm Brogdon watch for Bucks fans, because obviously he is the guy who is not here this year. He's had a good start with Indiana. He's been dishing out double-digit assists. He's been scoring about 22 points a game. Of course, Indiana has also lost all their games so far. They're 0-3, so I guess you have to. It's a give and take there, but I realize this isn't a binary, but Wesley Matthews is the guy who takes his place in the starting lineup. And I really feel like they're seeing some pretty great things in the early going with Wesley Matthews. Defensively, he's been, of course, he's been solid. He's been contributing on both ends of the floor. What have you seen from him so far? It seems like things are off to a good start with Wesley.
Yeah, if you're going to compare him and Malcolm stats-wise, I don't think that Wes is going to win out. Mostly because, you know, Malcolm is in a very different role. He's basically the only guy in the Pacers who can create offense and score. He needs to be like their number one option on a nightly basis for him to have a chance. And, you know, he had multiple good looks against the Pistons on Monday night, just couldn't finish them late in the fourth quarter. He played a great game otherwise, from what I can tell. He's played generally well for what they're doing. Just it hasn't led to team success, and that might be symptomatic of just the way their roster's built and the guys they lost this summer, and obviously Victor Oladipo going out. But Wes Matthews, you know, 14 points a game, shooting 38% from three. You know, he's got, you know, a handful of rebounds, couple assists, couple steals a game. You know, he's doing what the Brogdon role is in Milwaukee, which is, you know, you're not going to be that first option. You're likely going to be the fourth or fifth option when you're on the court with that starting unit. And what you need to do is you need to, you know, make three pointers, drive for, you know, drive for a few buckets here and there to keep the defense honest. Move the ball, make the extra pass. He had a really great play in the fourth quarter on Monday, where after a Brook Lopez steal, the Bucks had multiple extra passes, and he was the last one to make one, cutting into the lane and kind of throwing back around his shoulder to Chris Middleton, who was wide open in the corner and paid off the pass. So, that's what he needs to do. He's still getting adjusted, in some ways. He's shooting a high volume of threes, which is exactly what he needs to do, and hitting the number he is. Has been good, and he's been finishing really well at the times when he actually does get inside for two-point shots. He's 8 of 9 from the floor inside the arc. Obviously, that won't hold up, but making good decisions with the ball in your hand, not forcing too many things, and playing solid defense, I think that's everything that the Bucks want from him. And so far, I think that he has handled the transition fairly well with room to grow.
He's got kind of a funny release. Joining Brook Lopez is another guy who kind of has an unusual release, but he's been effective throughout his career at three-point shooting, and as you said, so far, so good on that front. The biggest story, I would say, from the first couple games, first three games of the season, I guess, but mainly the first two games, has been Giannis Antetokounmpo fouling out in both occasions. It became a storyline really in both games, because he fouls out in overtime against the Miami Heat. The Heat, of course, go on to win, although not for giving the Bucks lack of chances. The Heat definitely need to work on their free throw shooting down the stretch. But Giannis fouling out against the Rockets with 5 minutes to go, and the Bucks persevering. They actually didn't lose any ground at all. Wound up they were up six when he went out. They won the game by 6 points. So that was a tale of overcoming his absence. The fouls that fouled him out in both cases are, I think, safely can be in the category of ticky-tack. They definitely aren't maybe fouls you'd expect an MVP candidate to be whistled for. We could go into a whole discussion about MVP treatment and whatnot, but they did seem small. But there were other fouls during the course of the game that you probably could point to and say, Giannis maybe didn't need to pick the foul up there. It's a bit of a paradox trying to convince him to not go all out at all times and avoid some of those fouls when he is somebody who prides himself on going all out, and that's part of what's made him so effective. So what has been the discussion around the fouls, and what can he do, and what is just simply out of his control when it comes to trying to keep that foul count down?
Giannis, more than anyone, knows that he's going to pick up fouls. It's going to happen. Like, there's going to be charges. There's going to be, fouls where he's trying to protect the rim, all that kind of stuff. But he also knows that he can't commit stupid fouls. He used that word himself. And that he's done that too often. He feels like he and a lot of guys on the team have been too excited. At least they were in the first two games where, they're just trying to do everything. And I feel, this is me. I feel like that's kind of symptomatic of not trusting the defense enough. Like, if you're reaching, if you're fouling along the perimeter, if you're, kind of giving a little extra body as the guy's trying to get around you for a drive, that's all totally unnecessary. You need to be able to trust the defense and the guys behind you to pick up where you left off. I think the Bucks did a better job of that against the Cavaliers. I think they did a better job of not committing dumb touch fouls away from the play. I think, against the Heat, one of the reasons that Giannis was in a position to foul out was that late in regulation, they needed to foul, and they were unable to commit the foul, resulting in a situation where Giannis had to take the foul. So instead of going into overtime with four fouls, he goes into overtime with five. And if they had been more crisp, had been able to execute and get a foul earlier, then someone else would have picked it up. And then Giannis would have been freed up to be a little bit more aggressive in overtime and not, be susceptible to Goran Dragic being able to sell a foul to the refs. I mean, granted, I say that, and yes, if someone else commits the foul, maybe free throws are made, the game doesn't get to overtime. But the point is, they need to be able to execute in ways to keep him from getting fouls. At an end of game situation in the future, they need to make sure that if he has four fouls, he's not the one giving the foul to try and prolong the game. Someone else needs to do that, and they need to be good at that. But I think he will figure it out. he's had foul troubles at multiple points in his career. He had foul trouble in FIBA where he was, you know, racking up a ton of fouls. And granted, that's a, you know, a 40-minute game with only five fouls. But he's going to have to be able to figure that out. And I think he will. He's one of the best defenders in the NBA. He's one of the best players, maybe the best player in the NBA. And so, you know, he's going to be out there. He's going to have opportunities. And I think that people didn't like the foul that fouled him out against Houston. And yes, it was very minor, but he also can't put himself in that situation where he's maybe, like he said, getting overexcited. You know, you put your hand on somebody's back, and even if it's light, the refs are going to call that because that could be a very dangerous play. And it wasn't something that maybe he should have fouled out for, but it's a foul. And I think that he's going to do a better job of avoiding those fouls. I think on Monday night, he had his first foul like early in the second quarter, and he kind of like crouched down, put his head down, like almost like he was trying to go the whole game without committing a foul. Like, because he had been staying vertical, hadn't been swiping, like none of that stuff. And he ended up finishing with only two. And that was a positive for both him and the team. You know, they averaged almost 30 fouls a game in the first two games. And then on Monday, they had just 15, only five at halftime, being a lot more solid, a lot more disciplined. And when they do that, you know, it just gives them a much, you know, wider margin for error because they're not giving away points. They're not, you know, in a situation where individual players have to be less aggressive because they're carrying fouls. They can play the way they want to play, and that's going to be a key for them going forward.
This is the first time we've chatted since the opener, and before that opener, you had a chance, along with several other reporters, to talk to Giannis about this Harvard study that we mentioned on the last podcast and was a big story in the Journal Sentinel, a quote that Giannis had given to some Harvard researchers for a case study on the Milwaukee Bucks. You can find a lot of this information at jsonline.com if you want to revisit it. But kind of a twist in Giannis saying he has no recollection, does not believe he ever said the words that if the Bucks struggled this year, it would make his decision relative to signing the Supermax in the offseason, it would make it a lot harder. He denied ever saying those words, which caught me by surprise. And I'm curious what that was like for you there. I mean, was the mood, was he hurt by this whole fiasco? Was he confused? I mean, what was sort of his reaction? I promise we're not going to talk about the Supermax on every one of these podcasts, but that is sort of an interesting development that we had early in this last week. So what was sort of your takeaway from that conversation?
I think he was pretty chill about it. Honestly, JR, if you told me we were going to start the season with a he said, she said between a Harvard professor and Giannis, I would have thought you were crazy.
That is journalism, right? You never know where it's going to take you.
But here we are, NBA drama hitting us right in the face. You and I have both seen the Harvard case study. We see the quote in there. We see it attributed to Giannis in there. So that's where we're at. And he answered the questions in Houston. It was pretty forthright, you know, in talking about that and the MVP. Both topics, he goes, I don't want to talk about that. And then he just kept talking. So I think that he, handled it fairly well, you know, as those situations go. I don't think he's harboring like any ill will or any angst. I don't think it's necessarily on his mind or like affecting him. I don't think the team really is affected at all. I know some people in Bucks fan land are worried about, you know, distractions and the team being upset or Giannis being upset, and I have seen no indication of that being the case in any way. I'm interested to see if there's another chapter to this, but there might not be. You know, I think that it's something that very, very possibly could just disappear into the ether and go away, or, you know, suddenly sometime in the future, we or someone else will be like, oh, we got the tapes, and and then it'll, you know, take new life. But I don't think that the quote itself attributed to Giannis is that exciting either. It was only interesting, I thought, because we had never heard Giannis being that frank about his, his free agency and saying those words. And maybe he didn't say those words. Maybe this is a fabrication. Maybe he did say those words. I know, like, sometimes I talk for this whole podcast and then you would play it back to me and oh, it's like, oh wow, I said that. Like I talked about Malcolm Brogdon for a while. Like what? Sometimes you just kind of, forget. But that's neither here nor there. The words themselves are not inflammatory. They are reasonable. Oh, a guy who is incredibly competitive and really wants to win and has a singular focus on winning a championship says that if the team he's with continues being really good and can win, he'll stay with them. And if they are not playing well, then he might have to think about what he wants to do. It's like, okay, like that's kind of what I already expected. Like I have no reason to believe that Giannis has to be blindly loyal to the Bucks. Just like, no team has to be blindly loyal to a player. It happens all the time. The Los Angeles Clippers put Blake Griffin's number in the rafters and then traded him. The Raptors, treated DeMar DeRozan as their, number one absolute paramount star, and then he was gone. People move around in the NBA all the time, whether it's their choice or not, whether they say they love where they are or they don't. That's just part of the deal. And we'll see what happens in the future. The events of the next few months will certainly play a part in whatever the future holds, regardless of what happens. And, let's just play some basketball because that's really what is going on. Is the basketball season has started. Let's see how the games go. Let's see how the playoffs go. Let's enjoy that. And we'll handle everything else when it comes.
Yeah, what's striking to me is it opens, you've kind of alluded to this, it opens up the possibility for a next chapter where there is a tape of Giannis saying this. And that would be, to me, kind of unfortunate because of what you're just saying. One, this quote is very consistent with, I guess, at least talking to you on the podcast, what the worldview is for Giannis, that winning is the only thing, and he's going to do what, leads him to the most winning. And there's no reason to think right now the Bucks wouldn't be that place, but you don't know that. So it's consistent with his worldview, and I would say not that inflammatory or anything, and it's not that, again, the idea of demanding loyalty from an athlete to a team he was drafted to is sort of a weird concept, and I understand why some fans feel that way, but also believe it's very unfair. So Giannis saying and doing all the right things, and maybe it does just go away. That would probably be best for all involved, but hopefully there's no tape, because then it's, why did Giannis lie about saying something that he, or whatever. We'll see what happens there.
Either that or a Harvard professor suddenly has issues with Harvard, right? Like,
right.
And who knows? Like, that could be the other subplot. Could be like, oh, Giannis didn't say that. Oh, like, that's academically dishonest. And and suddenly, like, that becomes an issue. But I can't believe you're talking about this on the podcast. I mean, if we want to talk Ivy League hoops and stuff, I'm down. But
Columbia!
But other than that, come on, what are we even doing here?
It's true. We have spent a lot of time at Harvard. Let's go someplace that is definitively not Ivy League. We discussed that Miami game. Let's talk about Miami a little bit, just a little bit. Are they? They might be for real. As disappointing as it was to lose a game against the Miami Heat, a team that is not seen as a top three contender in the Eastern Conference, at Pfizer Forum, the Bucks did force overtime on a tip-in at the buzzer by Giannis. They had chances. They just could not get shots to fall. Very frustrating game. But maybe Miami is okay. They did not have Jimmy Butler in this game, who just had a baby born, so he was out of commission. But they've got a lot of young talent, a lot of rookies. And I don't know, man. Maybe Miami is somebody that we can't just dismiss out of hand.
Yeah, if I had to pick a team, and I did in my recent Reddit AMA on the Bucks Reddit page, if I had to pick a team that would be most worrisome or could be most troubling for the Bucks in the playoffs, that non-Sixers category, I went with the Heat, because the Heat have, over the past few years, given the Bucks problems. Granted, last year they exercised some of those demons. They lost to the Heat early on a tough back-to-back, and then won three in a row against the Heat, including one by, I feel like they were up by a kajillion points at one point. But they have this this kind of like Heat culture that they always are talking about. And, you know, they work hard. They have a bunch of guys who are strong, athletic, physical, you know, play hard, play together, play for the team, all that stuff. And we saw that at Fiserv Forum, like even without Jimmy Butler, you know, Deion Waiters, no James Johnson, somebody who in the past has, you know, been physical with Giannis and, you know, made his path to the basket a little bit more difficult. Without all those guys, you know, they still move the ball well. They still have a bunch of like really competent guys who work well together. Kelly Olynyk, you know, he's not flashy, but he did a lot of little things and was able to get open shots, create open shots for his teammates, move around, use like his gravity to suck in some defenders to open some lanes for people. You know, they just had a good working thing. And Goran Dragic, you know, he's been an all-star in this league. And he was able to kind of show out late. He fouled two guys out. He scored 25 points. Bam Adebayo at both ends was getting things going. You know, he's a really promising young player in the NBA. His block on Eric Bledsoe, you know, toward the end of that game, was just really impressive the way he ran the floor and was able to catch him from behind. And Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn, like those guys, you know, they actually got Miami going a little bit there in the third quarter to close the gap. So I think they have a pretty competent team. You know, definitely a well-run organization, you know, going from Pat Riley to Eric Spoelstra. They've had a lot of continuity with the way they want to do things. And then when you add Jimmy Butler to that mix, it's a very, very combustible piece. You know, Deion Waiters too. But if those guys can kind of, you know, fit back into who the Heat are and what they're doing, you can see a path to where that could be one of the better teams in the East. You can also see Jimmy, you know, capsizing a team because he's done that before. You know, maybe the offense runs too much through him, and on certain days it's just not going to work as well, and that's going to lead to problems. But they're a really intriguing team. I think they could be a good team. I think they have a pretty high floor in terms of the guys that they have and the talent that they have, and I see them as a playoff team and somebody who could, you know, maybe even challenge for one of the top four spots in the East. It's still really early to try and figure all that out. You know, pretty much, you know, everybody's only played three or four games, and so kind of sorting those things out, it's definitely too early. I remember last year people were getting all like super excited about, like, I think the Magic were like off to a really great start. It's like, oh, could the Magic like be a surprise like top four team? And like, yes, they were a playoff team, but they were mostly just like a cute playoff team. We'll see if they, among others, can improve this season. So, you know, give it a couple more weeks and we'll start to get maybe more of a clearer picture on where teams stand. And, you know, we'll also get a slightly clearer picture as the Bucks go on the road for their next game. They take on the Celtics, a game that should be fairly interesting between a couple of 2-1 teams that look a little bit different than last year.
Yeah, Wednesday in Boston, the start of a pretty gruesome stretch of road games. They then play Friday in Orlando, come back home on a back-to-back. They get one home game in the next seven, and it's on a back-to-back Saturday at home against the Toronto Raptors. Of course, that's an Eastern Conference Finals rematch, although not really because Kawhi Leonard isn't there anymore. Pascal Siakam is still there if Bucks want to go check out some PTSD and see the Bucks play, because after that they're gone for another full four games until November 14th, the subsequent Monday they come back. So a pretty tough stretch here, and really overall the Bucks early season schedule is pretty gruesome. You have to start the season in Houston, for crying out loud, and this is going to be an interesting stretch. Last year I remember thinking several times during the year, oh, this is going to be a tough stretch, this is going to be the one, maybe they only come out 500 and then I look like an idiot because they won, you know, 2/3 of everything. But I don't know what to make of this. I feel like the Bucks maybe will take a few more on the chin this time around with this stretch of seven. I believe is it 7 of 8 road games or 6 of 7 road games?
6 of 7. And you're right. I mean, this is going to be a stretch where we learn a lot more about who the Bucks are and how fast they can kind of put it together. Because you mentioned Boston, Orlando, and then right after Orlando, they're playing Toronto back at Pfizer Forum. Then the four-game West Coast trip, I mean, it's a pretty tough slate. You look at, you know, they start in Minnesota. The Timberwolves are off to a 3-0 start. Karl Anthony Towns is playing fantastic. And as a team, they're kind of putting it together. You know, then they go from there to play the Clippers, and we all know how good the Clippers have been. You know, obviously Kawhi leading the charge, you know, for that team that is very deep, very talented, doesn't even have Paul George yet. But they're still, you know, a very fearsome team. Go from there to Utah. Oh, Utah, just a, you know, nice 3-1, you know, a team that, you know, we saw at Pfizer Forum in the preseason, but that really is nothing compared to what the regular season is going to bring. Obviously, Rudy Gobert didn't play in that preseason game. Should give kind of a different look. And then they're going to Oklahoma City, a team that is currently 1-3, but they do have a positive point differential. They have been in games. They're you know, the West is just so tough that teams are going to, you know, teams are going to lose, and they're going to have, you know, slightly worse records because they're playing other West teams. But the Thunder, I mean, just because you know, Paul George isn't there, Russell Westbrook isn't there, they're not totally out of it. I mean, Chris Paul plus, you know, a bunch of talent around him, they have a pretty solid group. And so especially at the end of a road trip, at the end of a 6 road games and 7 stretch, that's a tough way to end it. So we'll have to see how the Bucks can handle it. Last year they had an early November road trip where they went 2-2, where they beat the Golden State Warriors, where they came on the second game of back-to-back and won at Denver, something a lot of teams didn't do last year. And so that 2-2 road trip ended up being a big positive. We'll have to see how these next 7 games shake out because of the difficulty in the schedule in terms of the teams they're playing, as well as the difficulty in the scheduling in terms of how they all shake out on the calendar.
Yeah, all hail our undefeated Timberwolves overlords. This is their year, the year that the Timberwolves run away with the West. I can feel it at 3-0. Wednesday night in Boston, of course, the Bucks did spend some time there in the Eastern Conference semifinals last year. They took care of business then. We will see if they can keep their run going here in the early start of the season. Matt Velasquez, once again, he is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for joining us, Matt. We will catch you again very soon.
All right, catch you later.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating review. Let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at JRRadcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. Find Matt_Velasquez on Twitter as well. If you want to yell at him directly, skip the middleman. You don't need me. Just talk to Matt. Or find him on Reddit. He does AMAs, as he mentioned earlier in this podcast. You could find that on the MKE Bucks subreddit. Thanks for tuning in. We will chat with you again very soon. Take care.